Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
So hello, this is Chad Sniffen from Prevent Connect. Today I'm talking with Jonathan Grove at Pacific Lutheran University. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, Chad. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for being on the interview. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your work at Pacific Lutheran University?
My official title is that I'm Men Against Violence Program Coordinator based out of the Women's Center here at PLU. And that implies a couple of different things. Most of my work is sort of in the prevention education sphere, obviously. We have the CalCASA DOJ campus grant, and so sort of my portion of that is taking care of the incoming education component of that and working on that piece of the grant, as well as doing prevention education sort of workshops and working with our peer educators in my Men Against Violence sort of capacity, doing workshops with sports teams, with classes, kind of whatever group I can get in front of, as well as advising and supporting social justice, anti-sexist men's group, which we call Men as Partners Promoting Equality here on our campus. So kind of an overview of my day-to-day life, I guess.
You recently presented at the first national conference for campus-based men's gender equality and anti-violence groups. That was a conference that was held in St. John's College in Minnesota. And you did two workshops there. And one of them was focused on selling masculinities and using your experiences as a salesperson to inform the work that you do on your college campus. Could you talk a little bit about how this idea of selling masculinities developed and what experiences you've had in selling stuff?
The idea for the workshop came out of a conversation with Ben Atherton-Zeman, who we've actually worked with quite a bit and I've known for quite a while. But we were talking about some of the work that we do and sort of negotiating how we do it. And I mentioned the techniques and sort of ideas that I'm sure we'll talk about here in a moment to Ben, and sort of things I've thought about as maybe common knowledge. And he suggested that it would make for a really great workshop. And he was very interested by some of those concepts. So actually, that conference was the first time I'd done this particular presentation. And it went really well. Kind of going to my background, before I went to college, I sold cars for a year. That was kind of my first opportunity to sort of learn sales techniques. And then after graduating from college, I wanted to do actually the same thing that I do right now. There just weren't really jobs available doing that. So I parlayed my part-time job at the Home Depot into a full-time job and got promoted several times. And most recently, before actually starting here, was the sales manager, if you will, for that company and some of the pieces that they do. So that sales process has been something that I've done quite a bit and that I bring to this work. As we reach out some of those harder-to-reach groups, broaden the base of people involved in this kind of work, the thing that is going to make us the most effective is basically selling these concepts, because we are selling a product. The product happens to be more of a social justice philosophical sort of product, but it's a product nonetheless. And, you know, there are issues that come up with that in terms of kind of where people are at and bridging sort of our ideas to them and presenting them in a way that they can hear. So that's kind of where this comes from. I had assumed that everybody else had the same base of knowledge that I did, and happy to be able to share that to make all of us that much more effective if that happens. So
I was fascinated by your workshop, and part of that reason for that fascination is I've worked retail many times growing up in high school and in college, and I was never a good salesperson. I was always a horrible salesperson. I found your presentation fascinating partially because I don't have that foundation of sales technique, and I've never been very good at the process of selling things to people. And I learned a lot about the process from your presentation, actually. So could you talk a little bit about the process of what you do in terms of selling masculinities at PLU?
One thing that came to mind as you were talking about your own experience, I think something that people often assume about this sort of topic area is that you have to be an extrovert person to do it well. And I would offer that you don't need to be that. Actually, when I started selling cars, I was very introverted and was terrified that people were going to come in the door and I would have to help them. The foundation of what it takes to be a good salesperson is really only a commitment to help and succeed in that effort. So sort of a commitment to the folks that you're working with. Product knowledge and belief in the product that you're selling is of immense importance, because it's just so hard to present something that you're not very familiar with. Being an adaptable person that's empathetic and connects to the people that they're working with and really caring about people, those three components are really what makes a good salesperson. And I think all of us who do this sort of work can see elements in ourselves in terms of how effective we are in connecting to audiences across those three as well. If someone has those three components, they can really adapt that to whatever product they want to sell. So to use my own experiences as an example, I very thoroughly learned the sales process selling cars, but then when I was selling flooring installation or appliances or whatever you might have, it was really the same. Those three were totally adaptable to that. So it's just sort of relearning a product. So that, I think, is sort of the framework, I guess, or the sort of a starting point. I think for us, we have to understand our product and understand it in that way, so that it's not just a concept, but we think about it in terms of how do we make this concept sort of saleable? How do we make this something that people can access and incorporate into their own lives? And also, kind of going along with that, really focusing on the areas that we're not succeeding. And you know, it's, and I don't think we do it enough in this field of celebrating our successes. I think we really need to focus on that. But at the same time, we often, and I'll get into this here shortly, I'm sure, but we often don't want to go after those areas of sort of resistance or places that were not very effective for a variety of reasons. And I think we all have different reasons for that. But, yeah.
Well, one of the things that we talked about when we were preparing for this interview, and it's in your the PowerPoint slides that are available on our website. So if whoever's listening to this podcast did not pull it from our website, if you go to www.preventconnect.org, the slides from Jonathan's presentation are on our website. And one of the things that you talk about in the presentation is the assumptions that are made, you know, as part of this foundation for prevention and for doing this kind of selling of masculinities in your prevention work. Could you briefly talk about also kind of what assumptions are important when you're approaching this as a sales technique?
Sure, absolutely. I think some of the basic things that we can start with are that we are, those of us doing this work, one of the primary things that we're after is to create a cultural shift so that those, you know, think about the population that's not engaged and hasn't been, and to engage that group, which I would suggest is a very large one, if we engage the majority of that group, then we can really start to shift sort of the balance of power, if you will, and get sort of get momentum on our side, if that makes sense. And I think another piece of that is, you know, men traditionally have not been part of this work, in that we need to educate those guys to understand that that not taking action is in itself being part of the problem, really, and not the solution. While doing that, I think it's important to balance involving men, but at the same time confront patriarchy and make that very clear, so that we're not falling into this process of, you know, we're here to save the women or something, which just further perpetuates the core issues. Also, not a further assumption is that we're not trying to recruit perpetrators. And what I mean by that is we're not trying to, for those familiar with like Lisak's research, we're not trying to, you know, recruit the undetected rapist, the serial offenders, the ones who, you know, there's not a level of empathy with their victim to start with to be that foundation. We probably will be recruiting men who have done things that would, that are sort of perpetrator type behaviors. However, they probably, and I would suggest generally, have done that out of ignorance, and following, you know, the social scripts and those kinds of things. Not, and I offer that that's a different sort of way of looking at the world than sort of the serial perpetrator does. So I think there's a distinction there, but not trying to recruit perpetrators at all, because we have the numbers to overwhelm them.
Right.
The last two pieces are that men have empathy, and that we should expect that, and also understanding that we as men are self-interested, and that the way that you, being that we're human beings, the way that people engage with things is through their self-interest. So if you can appeal to that, then you've got a much better chance at engaging them. And lastly, if we expect sort of the average guy who has never thought about sexual assault, for instance, as an issue that relates to him personally. We need to engage with them on a level where we're not judging them, and we're using sort of language and concepts and things that they can really connect with. Because if we don't do that and sort of meet them where they are, then, you know, we might as well just save our energy for something else. So those, I think, are some sort of framing assumptions that we can start with. And there are obvious connections to the sales piece, I think, especially in that last one of meeting folks where they're at.
Well, your PowerPoint presentation is just a great collection of sales technique advice. So I really want to encourage anyone listening to the podcast to look up your presentation on preventconnect.org and just search for Jonathan Grove. And in it, you share lots of different pieces of advice. A little bit too much advice for the podcast, but part of that, you know, you begin that advice with some framing thoughts. I was wondering, could you kind of address what those framing thoughts are? I mean, you've been presenting a framework all throughout our talk, but we have some very specific things that you say in your framing thoughts.
Yeah.
Could you mention those a little bit?
Absolutely. And these are meant sort of as framing thoughts, you know, if you're about to go into a presentation or meeting with students or whoever, whatever that situation may be, just sort of thoughts to start with. Go into to that setting, first and foremost, trying to really make a friend. And I know that sounds a little funny, but, you know, if you go in and you have your message, even if you deliver it very well, your chances of getting them to buy in are greatly increased if they like you as a person. If they want to hang out with you later on, then chances are they're going to be much much more sort of bought in and pay much more attention, and your chances go up in terms of making the proverbial sale if they like you as a person. That's just sort of who we are as people. Also being sincere in our desire to help them. Again, this kind of goes back to the self-interest piece. So you also have to genuinely care about that individual and present the argument in a light that appeals to their self-interest. Also, I think what's important for those of us who are sort of practitioners is to continue improving our skills, learning what other folks might be doing, you know, if there's innovative new ways of doing things, incorporating what works. And also sharing that information with others and just continually trying to improve and get better and more efficient at what we do. And a last one is not just to offer, you know, our talking points, but also be, and I would say even more than just willing to, but maybe suggest and open up dialogue for sharing sort of creative ideas, advice about how to work in other things, and really offer yourself as a resource to the folks that you're working with so that you're not just sort of selling something to them, but you're collaborating with them and you're a partner in that. So I think those couple of things will really help, in that particular setting, whatever that might be, to engage maybe a little bit better or have a more of a depth of connection with the folks that we're working with.
That's great. Could you talk a little bit about the sales techniques that you talked about in your presentation and kind of like things that for people to think about for each of the steps of sales, of selling things?
Sure. There's actually not a wide variety, but there's a couple of different versions of sales techniques. But the one that I've used in this PowerPoint is just sort of a generic six-step sort of thing, which you can find if you Google sales techniques. You'll come up with a bunch. But this one basically starts with preparation, goes to initial contact, the actual presentation, and then dealing with objections, which I think is sort of a challenging area for most of us, closing the sale, and then the follow-up. The preparation piece, that's just sort of figuring out who your audience is going to be, who are you trying to reach, what barriers might come up for them, and kind of building in ways of addressing those so that you sort of get ahead of that before it even pops up. And just, again, knowing your audience and your product and kind of how to blend those two together in the most effective way. The initial contact, the keys here are really just to have sort of a 15-second, here's my purpose, sort of a statement ready to go. Using questions that make them think to really sort of get them engaged and involved. And then using humor and doing things like that to really build a relationship with your audience, even as you go through, so they enjoy hearing what you have to say. And lastly, never losing sight of the objective, even as you go through your presentation, just keeping sight of kind of your ultimate goal, even as you go through and sort of adapt to where your audience is. The presentation, for a lot of us, that's the most exciting part. Just remembering to be, on time and prepared and relaxed, and also excited. You have to bring energy to it to help that sort of making friends process. Another key piece, I think, is to research in sort of sales stuff shows that about 90% of the time, your audience will actually tell them or tell you as a presenter what it is that they need to reach the point where they're willing to buy. So, they'll give you clues about things that they're interested in or sort of ways that you can connect to them. Also, empathizing and making it relevant, which I think most of us sort of build in every day. Another one is focusing on the benefits and not features. And the benefits are, features are like the power locks on your car. The benefit of that is that you don't have to go around and hit each button. And so basically people buy benefits. They don't buy the feature per se, if that makes sense. In the PowerPoint, you'll see it's WIIFM, which is WIFM, short for what's in it for me, and just addressing that as you go through your presentation. Along with that, and I kind of mentioned this earlier, but don't be afraid to ask. When you get to that point where you have a request to make, we have lots of ideas and stereotypes about who cares and doesn't and all those sort of things. And don't let that get in the way of making your ask, because I think we allow that to get in our way more often than we like to think. So just be aware of that. Also, only making like 3 requests at a time and not a lot of sort of the shotgun approach of here's a whole bunch of different things that you can do. Just have something, coming up, 3 things that are sort of relevant that you can ask for so you don't overwhelm them. Again, adapting to your audience. Also, just kind of being aware of what we do well when we present and sort of after the fact, looking at those things that maybe we could do better and exploring those, creating action steps on that to get more effective. And then working their interest that you pull out of the presentation, working that into your follow-up plan so that when you continue contact with them, that you can keep sort of hitting on those points that they expressed were important to them. The follow-up thing is actually very important. I don't know that we do that very well in this field, but we do, and it's frustrating, but research in the sales area shows that people need about 5 to 10 exposures often to actually make a sale, and so continuing that relationship is very important. Objections, which I pointed out earlier, is a very difficult thing for most of us. What we have to understand is that objections are not a denial or a wall going up. It's really a request for more information. So don't be put off. It's part of the process. Treat those objections with respect and give a thoughtful response, but do it in a way that presents more information that addresses whatever that informational gap might be. And as much as you can anticipate what those may be, you can address those throughout your presentation to try to avoid those objections. In terms of overcoming them, which is sort of sales lingo, but overcoming objections, validating their position, being respectful of that, giving them new information that addresses why they feel a certain way about it, try to get to the cause of the concern. And in some cases, that may mean focusing less on the specific concern and addressing the cause underlying it. Sometimes just restating the objection. I know I've certainly said things that after they came out of my mouth really didn't sound quite as wonderful as when I thought about it, saying that out loud so that they can hear that, and then just being tactful in the response to it. The closing piece is not to be shy about asking for it for the sale again. I think we all kind of struggle with that. And also looking for, as we're going through the process with whoever we're selling to, is look for signals or questions or whatever those things might be that give us the idea that they're ready for the ask. They're ready to sort of purchase. And there may be questions about, like with our men's group, what time do they meet and where? I'll sort of couched in, I'll look at my schedule, but that would be the time to say, hey, you know, why don't you come out and really give them the opportunity to say yes. Following along with that is after you ask that closing question, quit talking. Some of us struggle with that and want to keep talking. In doing that, we don't give them the opportunity to say yes, so being aware of that piece. Also, sometimes leading them through a set of easier questions that kind of lead to that bigger decision to buy. And again, that could be any number of different things about, do you care about this? Well, here's sort of a way to get involved around that or something like that. And don't give up too soon. That kind of goes to being afraid to make that ask. Sometimes we're not as willing maybe as we should be to continue and follow up with folks. The follow-up step is just as important as everything else. After you put in that kind of time trying to build that relationship and give that information, you don't want to just let that go. And so continuing that relationship and understanding it may take a while, especially with some of those harder-to-reach populations. It may be really a journey for them, and being willing to sort of walk along on that journey and help them get to the place that we hope they go to. That ultimately, I think, is really how we get more allies for social change and eventually create that very change. So that's sort of a run-through of the sales techniques. There's a lot of information out there online if people want to research that, and they can certainly get in touch with me if they'd like specifically to learn more about like how that works. But I think they're sort of good tools in terms of the work that we do and ways of being more effective at it.
So how could people get in touch with you, or how could they learn more about what you do at Pacific Lutheran University?
There's a website. It's www.plu.edu/MAV, Men Against Violence. My contact information is also on there. There's all sorts of different information on some of the things that we do and resource information and those kinds of things. But in terms of the sales piece, there's not a tremendous amount out there on our website for that, but they can certainly email, especially with specific questions or things. I'd be happy to respond and just kind of give feedback in terms of how I've used this or how I've seen others use it, or just sort of general ideas about how to apply this to the daily work that we do.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CalCASA.org.